everyone, welcome to the Outlaw Nation and another review here on the channel. We're excited to be doing this one. I am one of your hosts for this review. I am the Outlaw himself, John Roken. I'm joined by my fellow geek buddy over there and film lover and TV lover, Shannon McClung. How are you?
I'm okay, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to figure out what number I am in the Umbrella Academy since we seem to be adding people. Oh, no! Seem to be adding people to the Umbrella Academy. Interesting stuff. We're going to break down season two and review it. Have a little bit of some spoiler stuff. Not too deep into the spoiler stuff, but we would encourage you to watch Umbrella Academy season two before you watch our review of it, as we might veer into some deep spoiler stuff depending on the conversation. But we're going to sit down and just talk about it right here on the channel. Are you excited? Okay, well, it's 18 months later since the last one dropped, or the last episode dropped, of the Umbrella Academy on Netflix. Here from Steve Blackman, one of the creators and directors there, or writers rather, for the show. Shannon, what was your feelings about the first season?
You know, I had read when the book first came out, read the first few issues.
On Dark Horse, right.
Yeah, I mean, the comic, by, you know, for all intents and purposes, it sort of hits my sweet spot, sort of the prep school superhero, the gentleman superhero, talking about Reginald Hargreaves. But as we got into it, I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be for me. I mean, it was interesting enough for me to read the first 2 to 3 issues. When the show came out, I realized how much I did not actually get to.
Yeah.
Because I mean, especially the character of Five, I'm like, man, I don't think I got to any of this, because his journey is so fascinating. I mean, it's such an enjoyable watch. I will say, like, I feel like with most Netflix shows, most Netflix 1 hours, it does hit that little bit of a lull.
Yeah.
About,
I mean,
halfway,
that first season did. Yeah.
The first season, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It hit that sort of mid season lull where it's like, okay, I feel like the wheels are moving, but they have slowed down a little bit because they have 10 episodes they have to fill. But the way it ended, the revelations about Vanya, about Ellen Page's character, so awesome. I mean, like, the climax of the first season, Five kind of portaling them back, or basically portaling them out of the time that they are in, and that great 360 shot where you see them all kind of holding hands and you see them as kids. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's great. That's hit me right in the feels. So I was definitely excited for season two. I can't believe it's been 18 months.
Yeah. Since the last,
wow,
dropped. Yeah. You think it'd be a little bit longer, but it's been 18 months, and they, I mean, this time around, they are transported back to the 1960s, coming off of that season one finale in Dallas, Texas. They all arrive at different times in Dallas, Texas. And yes, the apocalypse is involved again this time around, but also the Kennedy assassination from 1963, November 22nd, I think that was. So you've got, as you said, you got Vanya, you got Luther, Diego, Allison, Klaus, number Five, Ben, and later on Reginald Hargreaves makes appearances throughout the tail end of the season. But they all land at different times, and throughout the episodes we see where they're landing, why they're landing. Each of them kind of picks up and moves on, Five being our kind of central protagonist again in this ensemble piece, but certainly someone who's making this all happen and making sure, trying to get everybody back to the right timeline, making sure everybody comes together so they can get taken back to the right timeline. But Vanya, when she lands, remember, she was essentially became the villain of the piece at the end of the first season. She does not have her memory about anything that happened. Luther ends up getting hooked up with Jack Ruby, and he's like this he's like this fighting guy for Jack Ruby, which is insane. Diego gets put in a mental ward where he befriends a character who we're going to talk to about in just a little bit. Allison ends up becoming part of the civil rights movement in the 60s in Dallas, marries a man who's part of the civil rights movement as well. Number five, though, when he lands, he's there to do his thing. Ben does his thing as well. Where's what's his face?
Klaus starts a cult.
Sure, Klaus starts. Yeah, there it is. Robert Sheridan. Klaus starts the cult. As you do in the 60s. Love and peace cult there, although a little bit ahead of time, I think, from when the peace cult was happening. I think it was more the mid 60s, but still is there. And then Ben is there as his, brother who's died in the spirit that's still connected to him.
So supernatural plus one.
Yeah, supernatural plus one. Exactly. Well put, man. But throughout this, what did you feel about this, that they put them in different timelines?
I thought that was great.
Times that they arrived at different times, rather. Yeah.
I thought it was awesome. And again, I don't know how much of this the book covers. I mean, it could be verbatim. Yeah. I love the fact that, yes, they all ended up in sort of a different years of the 60s, yeah, but all kind of geographically close. Mm-hmm. They all went on with their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sort of they accepted the reality of their situation. As a sort of underground bare knuckle boxer, I don't know why you would step into the ring with a guy who is clearly part
ape. Half ape. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the first couple times he gets the wink from Jack Ruby, you would think his opponents would be like, okay, the fix is in. This is not a smart course of action. I thought Allison's story was really nice because I think for the first season, Luther and Allison's romance, I was not that into.
Yeah.
It's no shot against either of the actors. I was just kind of like, I remember that was, I feel like that was in the mid-season lull, like when the episode finished up where they were ballroom dancing.
Yeah,
and I was
like,
this, it might be sweet. It's, I don't know. I'm not really into this. I love how their paths diverged a little bit. And I loved when you got to see her kind of use her rumor powers when she was explaining to her husband, was it Ray? Ray was his name?
Yeah.
She was explaining her powers and how they work. And you got to see what would happen once you open that Pandora's box, how difficult it is to shut it.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed that too. I would have liked to have them give Allison a little bit more to do. But again, when you have those rumor powers, and I think this is where the series a little bit didn't want to go too far with their storylines within the civil rights movement. I mean, she could easily have talked or rumored white cops into shooting other white cops or killing other white cops or beating up other white cops to stop them from beating up, black citizens and African-American citizens in the 60s who were doing their sit-ins, doing the protests. We saw there was a scene in one of the episodes where it got really brutal and she whispered into the cop's ear and he just walked away. You know, they could have gone another route with that, but I felt they were kind of limiting what Allison could do because they know Allison could absolutely like take care of this whole situation, and you remove the conflict and the creative obstacles or hurdles you might have to go through or go over. Remember, Allison, of course, feeling guilty coming out of the first season for what happened with her and Vanya. So there's that weight she's carrying as well. And of course, yeah, when she does speak or use her powers, it does cause problems between her and her husband when he sees what she does. And that plays itself out in interesting ways as well. I like the idea of what happens. I like what happens with Klaus or Diego. I'm sorry, let's move to Diego. I like what happens with Diego. This whole thing where he's in this mental ward, of course, Diego is the impulsive, passionate guy who uses the knives. So the way to contain him is to put him in a situation like this. And then, of course, they pair him with the character Lila Pitts, who's played by Ritu Arya, who we find out later because Kate Walsh comes back as the handler as well, is a essentially adopted daughter of the handler of Kate Walsh's character. And what they go through throughout the season is very interesting as well, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm a big Kate Walsh fan. I was actually in an episode of her sitcom Bad Judge, critically reviled Bad Judge. but she is, Kate Walsh is such a wonderful, wonderful performer, and she's a great bad guy. I mean, when she gets to go kind of full bad and in this series as opposed to like when she was in season one of Fargo, she's just such an engaging presence on screen. And then you get to see how she kind of gets in possession of Lila. And to Diego, he was another character that I was kind of like, yeah, he wanted to be number one. That was right. That was his season one arc. He was close with his mom. He wanted to be number one. Giving him this need to stop the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
Having him kind of fall in love. I mean, you really got to see some shades from, what's the actress? Is it David Castaneda?
Yeah, Castaneda, yeah.
Really got to see some wonderful shades that he hasn't played at this point.
Yeah, David Castaneda, that's the actor's name. Yeah, and you're right. But I think that speaks volumes about this entire second season. We got to really enjoy these actors living in these roles and the writing and the directing. Ironically, these episodes were shorter than the first season, yet you felt like they were filled with more. You felt like the actors got to breathe more in these roles. The storylines got to exist. The way the storylines intersected made a lot of sense. To me, it didn't seem forced at all. Most of the show, I think maybe there was one or two moments seemed convenient, but certainly not forced. And we got to see Five really use his powers in a way we hadn't seen before, and how brutal he can be, the numerous fight sequences he gets involved in, not only fighting his older version of himself, but when he has to kill all those members of the 12, I think, that is just shows you the level of power that this kid possesses. And that moment where he confronts Vanya near the end of the show, season, when he's trying to get everybody to show up so they can go through the portal and get out of this situation, seeing Vanya power up and then seeing him power up, you're like, oh, this could be a titanic confrontation.
Yeah, and you know, to go back to what you said about how these episodes were shorter, but they seemed more full.
Yeah.
As an audience, I think we know when a show is kind of treading water a little bit.
Right.
It's like,
right.
And you know, Lost is the perfect example. Like we have to fill in some space before we get to the thing that we really want to tell you. And yeah. Season one did the heavy lifting of establishing these characters, establishing the dynamic. And this season, they just got to have a lot of fun. I mean, the whole thing, I think it's the first episode where you get to see sort of what that Soviet invasion would have looked like.
Right.
And the Umbrella Academy at their full power. Like, they're not messing around. I mean, you get to see Spectral Ben with his tentacles all over the place. Yeah. I understand why they hold back on that stuff, because you don't want, one, it's expensive, but
also it's financially expensive. Yeah.
But it also, when it happens, it has such emotional resonance because you have fallen in love with these characters. I mean, I remember in season one when they showed, I think it was like a bank robbery that the kids foiled.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God, that was awesome. Right. I'd love to see that again, but I understand that you're not going to give that to me again.
Yeah, it has shades of that Wonder Woman scene where she stops the bank robbery. I think in her movie or in Justice League, she has a great sequence in there as well. We do get Hazel showing up for the first episode, just Cameron Britton, who's so great as that character, just for a little bit. We do find out the story of Lila throughout the series this season, and it's kind of brilliant, Shannon, from where they end up, because of course the handler kind of makes moves to kind of put herself in a position, because she's been demoted in essence, and she's working for the fish dude, and she's just not happy in the situation. So she makes a deal with Five to kind of kill the other members in 1983. So Five jumps 20 years ahead, kills all the members of the 12 except for the fish, brings the fish guy back, puts him in the fish bowl, and then she takes over. And in that moment, you see that Lila is having second thoughts about helping Kate Walsh's character, the handler, take over. And just when you're about to think that she is going to maybe turn on the handler, stuff happens in the final episode of the season that leads you to believe that Lila will be the main villain going into season three. So that's just and it's perfect comic book writing, perfect tragedy writing, that the woman who Diego is in love with and stopped Luther from killing ends up becoming the one they will have to kind of hunt down and fight in season three, it feels like.
Are we going full spoiler? Or no?
I don't know. I'm just saying, yeah, it feels like that's where we're going to go.
The moment that we get to see what Lila can do.
Yeah.
I think
especially was awesome.
with Allison. I think that was seeing her engage the Umbrella Academy in conflict. The thing that really hit me was how she fought Allison. Yeah. It's like, oh my God. And again, it's because we've been on a journey with these characters, not just Allison and Luther and Five and Diego, but we've been on that journey with Lila as well. Yeah. We know, we found out where she's come from. And even though she's paired up with essentially the villain, we still have a soft spot for her. I mean, that's what makes for really good, very, very satisfying watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd be remiss not to talk about a couple of the storylines. Certainly the Vanya storyline is very powerful. We know Ellen Page is very much in the LGBTQ community, very powerful supporter of that. Of course, she is a lesbian as well. Having the storyline where she has a romance with, I think Maren Ireland is the actress's name, who she plays Sissy, this romance with Sissy, but also their child that she has, Harlan, their child, that connection, and of course fighting through Carl, that who is married to Sissy. So having that moment where that romance slowly, having that storyline where the romance slowly blossoms episode to episode until it finally comes to fruition, and what that might be like in 1963 in Dallas, Texas, what it might be like to have that situation happening. And then that moment where she really has a powerful speech, Vanya does, talking about, you don't have to hide anymore. I'm tired. I don't want to hide anymore. And then when she has that back and forth with Carl, when Carl takes it out in the car and starts talking about how, you know, you need to put that sickness down. That was an emotionally resonant and overwhelmingly powerful moment to have in the series. Amongst all this other nuttiness that's going on, there's a very real conversation happening in the past that you could totally see happening nowadays. And that is, I love that the show gave that scene to those characters.
Yeah, 100%. And the Harlan angle that they're dealing with a kid who probably is on the spectrum.
Yes.
And Ellen Page saying, listen, we can take him someplace where, because in the 60s, they really didn't know what it was. They thought this is a kid who's shy. This is a kid who's being difficult. Yeah. Not realizing that this is an actual condition. And Ellen Page knowing, if you come with me, there are things we can do for him.
Right.
And seeing sort of the turn that happens with Harlan as well. I mean, everything, again, I think they knocked this season just out of the park.
Yeah, it's really surprising how well they did, Shannon, because you come out of the first season, you're like, oh, the episodes were a little over long, but these characters are great. The actors are fantastic. I got to give a love to all of them, not just Ellen Page and not just David Castaneda, but Tom Hooper, Emmy Raver-Lampman, Robert Sheehan, Aidan Gallagher, Justin H. Min, who is now apparently going to lead another Academy, and Colm Feore, I mean, it's so great to see his, or Fiore, however you say it, it's so great to see him, you know, usually a character actor you've seen in numerous movies, be a villain in numerous movies, certainly was a pseudo villain in season 1, but see him now kind of have a little more life to him. And then the big reveal about him, which, by the way, was the moment where my girlfriend was like, I don't know if I'm going to stick around for this. But it's a massive reveal in that moment. I don't think I want to spoil that. But what did you think about that reveal?
Well, that was something I remembered from the books.
Okay. And so it was, knew that already. Okay.
I don't remember if it was through my reading it or if it was through a conversation with someone, but I knew that turn was coming.
Yeah.
But Colm Feore, that guy is such an underused performer.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can look back. I mean, he was the main Frostdry. Was it Larfi in Thor, the first Thor.
Right.
And like, I'm not a big fan of that film, but I thought he was, with what he was given, he made the most of it. And watching him, like, I love that they were able to use him more this season. And just the way, just sort of that gentlemanly, that old aristocratic, gentlemanly air, when he sends them an invitation to a late supper to my pursuers. I'm like, this is such great writing. But also, you believe that this is something that this guy would do. Like, we might be on opposite sides of the battlefield, but there's no reason not to be uncivilized.
Yeah, I mean, and we get the live version, not the robot version of Grace, their mom, Jordan, played by Jordan Claire Robbins in this as well, Shannon. We don't know how she becomes the robot yet, so maybe that will show up in the third season, but I don't know. But I thought for sure they would address that. They would figure that out. They'd say why that happened or whatever. But I really enjoyed seeing her kind of like just act as a human being rather than, you know, the robot situation.
Well, yeah, and just getting
or Android
to see,
situation, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's going to be real interesting to see where they go. Like, we obviously have an idea of where they're going with season three, but also the Umbrella, they have changed the timeline.
Yes.
So maybe she won't become a robot. We don't know.
That's a great point. Yeah, maybe she sticks around and doesn't become that thing that was their mom. Absolutely.
I mean, I really hope season three we get the return of Pogo. We got to see baby Pogo.
We did.
I loved that character. The thing I love about the Umbrella Academy world is they don't feel the need to over-explain things.
Yeah.
Like, yes, AJ the Goldfish is the head of the commission.
Right.
We're not going to tell you any more than that. Pogo is a finely dressed chimpanzee with a light British lilt to his speech. We're not going to tell you any more than that.
Yeah.
I think there can be a thing in a lot of things we watch right now is the need to over explain things.
Yeah.
And it's one thing if it's a cop out, be like, hey, wait a minute, you introduced that thing, you didn't really say where it came from. These aren't plot devices. These are like, nope, this is the world. And if you're on the train, you're on the train.
Right. And they rely on the fact that you are either going to accept it or do some research on it and see what the background is. Because obviously, 63, a lot is happening here with LBJ and Kennedy at this time, the civil rights movement at this time. Also, this idea of like, you know, the rumors that have always been around about the Kennedy assassination, that it was a, you know, a conspiracy to kill him because he was kind of destroying these foundations, these institutions, these secret societies that were existing in America at the time, possibly or not possibly. I don't know. I don't have any evidence that they did or didn't exist. But having that one guy who is kind of the talking head of that secret society with the sunglasses and the cigarette, it had that vibe of Sam Giancana. Even though Sam Giancana was a little bit bigger and heavier, it had that vibe of Sam Giancana with the look. Also had that feeling of the cigarette man from The X-Files. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff that they threw in that could easily have been played for stereotypes or for caricature. And it actually works with the world they fleshed out and given you. I have to say, Shannon, these were like 40, sometimes 40 to 48 minutes long or 49 minutes long. These episodes kind of flew by one into the other, and
agreed.
I hope they do this into season three as well.
Yeah, I mean, I understand from a screenwriting perspective that you want to have sort of that structure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think generally, like with Network, I believe it's a five-act structure, but you want to have those story beats. Like, these are the things you're trying to hit.
Yeah.
But the thing that I really admire about British television is we're going to make X amount of episodes. We're going to take the number of episodes that we need. And that is it. Like, we're not going to try to have that filler. And they did a great job this season of squeezing all that story into 10 episodes without having that mid-season lull.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lila's turn was played well. You totally could understand why Diego like fell in love with her, but also understand when she does make the turn, why Diego doesn't 100% go with, I don't know, bash her for it necessarily or kick her out of his life for it necessarily. Let me tell you, as a Latino, sometimes we gravitate to the little crazy ones. We want to get involved with the ones that can play both sides. We get a little crazy. We get excited by that kind of stuff. So I was not surprised to see that play out in his character, in Diego's character. I kind of enjoyed that, to be honest with you. But also, we got to give some shout out to Yusuf Gatewood, who plays Raymond Chestnut. I thought he did a really great job as Allison's husband in there. And what he had to negotiate, his reactions to the situations. Oh, and we'd be remiss. My God, how have we gone this far without mentioning the Swedes? Shannon, the Swedes were great throughout this whole season as well.
Great. I mean, they reminded me on the same page as like the Nihilist from Big Lebowski.
Yes, absolutely.
And just the again, their interactions with Allison, just awesome.
Yeah.
Just, Again, so satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed thoroughly. Oh, and we got to give some love to Herb, right? I mean, Herb is so good in this season, getting so much to do as a guy they step on and push around and what have you. And he, you know, he's constantly like, hey, don't come at me. You know, I've got other things going on, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's so good in this one as well. And he was fun. Whenever he popped up in any of the scenes, I knew I was in for a great sequence and also some fun interactions between him. And when he shows up at the end, yeah, Ken Hall is the actor. When he shows up at the end, you're like, oh, this is just perfect, you know? And you're right. Like you just said, the world of the Umbrella Academy is so interesting because the stakes are always incredibly high. This is two seasons in a row now where the apocalypse is on the table, but they still find a way to have these quirky characters, quirky storylines, interesting events that occur, funny moments, and yet never lose the weight of what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they definitely have some of the best use of a Backstreet Boys song that's ever been used in an episode of television. Absolutely. I actually tweeted that out, and I think it was our fellow geek buddy Mike Vogel was like, Backstreet Boys in Umbrella Academy or Spice Girls in The Boys, which is better? I was like, oh, that's a tough, good question. That's a tough one.
That's again a fair point.
Both awesome. Yeah. Both awesome.
Absolutely. And now, you know, we'll see. Now, was there anything here that you didn't like about this season? Anything that kind of gave you kind of some trepidation or felt like we were lingering too long or didn't quite pan out the way you were hoping it would?
I mean, what I thought something was going to happen earlier in the season, and this is not a negative. Yeah, it's just sort of when Carl was in Jack Ruby's club.
Ah, yeah.
And Hopper, Luther had to go over and kind of escort him out. I thought for sure, I'm like, something is going to happen here. I thought the Jack Ruby of it all would have played a little bit more of a role towards the end of the series, but certainly not a negative.
Yeah. I thought the Swedes thing, as much as I enjoyed their performances individually as actors in those characters, I would have liked to have seen just a little bit more of how they came together. What was it all about? How
Umbrella Academy. Yeah. Umbrella Academy. That's all you know.
I guess so, yeah. But, you know, they get sent to do these things. They get sent to go after these people. I just would like to have seen a little bit more because they were unusual and that they, you know, they kind of shot each other for fun to see how quickly they could heal. That kind of stuff. So I wanted to see just a little bit more background on those guys because whenever they showed up, they were electric in the scenes that they were in with their quiet malice throughout. So I enjoyed that for sure. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more with Allison and Ray, a little bit more of the civil rights, you know, more than the sit down, more than the experiences, maybe something a little more conversational with a white policeman or something, and especially now that it's Black Lives Matter, it would have been interesting to see a conversation here between them about, you know, like a changing of mind maybe, or expressing points of views and see if maybe there's a way to do it without having to whisper anything, actually using your actual words to have a conversation about civil rights and see if you can change somebody's mind about it, you know? Well, so I think that would have been interesting.
You wonder if, because obviously this was filmed way before everything that has happened, you wonder if the writers would have seen our current climate and feel the need to address it more.
Yeah, maybe.
With how they handled the civil rights aspect of the show.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And shout out to Robert Sheehan, who did such a great job in this episode, in this season as Klaus. I really think he really kind of came into his own in the character. He was a bit irritating for me in the first season, but in this season, I really felt connected to the guy, and he did some great emotion. He had some great emotional beats as he was walking away from the liquor, but also that's the whole storyline where he was trying to convince that great love of his not to go to Vietnam. Those scenes were so tender and sweet and clumsy and awkward, as they would be if you were seeing someone you love in the past and you're trying with all your might to try to make sure they don't go and do something that's going to lead to their eventual death. And possibly not. As you said, they've messed with the timelines now. Maybe he survives Vietnam. I don't know.
Well, yeah, he did. I do agree with you. I mean, and I don't know if it was a combination that they just didn't know quite what they were doing with the character and his performance. Yeah. Because I definitely thought, I mean, he had some very funny moments in season one. He had some hilarious and heartbreaking moments in season two. And, you know, you think it's they've lived in these characters for a while. They know these people. They know how to operate as these characters. Right. And yeah, watching that scene in the diner where the kid's uncle is basically it was terrible. A terrible thing to see, and right. probably a very real situation of what would have happened back then.
Yeah. They definitely and subtly cover toxic masculinity, LGBTQ representation or rights, and racism. You know, so it's very interesting to see that throughout this show, they had these moments to make a statement about all those subjects. Oh, and of course, a Me Too movement, like women being seen as equal, you know, and that all of that was rolled through this whole thing as well. So absolutely enjoyed this season. So shout out to Steve Blackman and Jeremy Slater for a fantastic season 2 of this. Shout out to all the actors and all the directors involved as well, Shannon, for these episodes, because I think they did a really great job bringing these characters and these sequences and this and these storylines to life and having them pay off in a positive way.
Yeah, I was reading something, an article just trumpeting Aidan Gallagher as Five and his performance, about how he, probably too long in the tooth now, but how he would have made an incredible Damian Wayne.
That's a great point. I could see that, absolutely. He's fantastic throughout the whole season. If we didn't touch on him enough, it's because everybody else has probably talked so greatly or so much about how great he is as the character of Five. But we want to give a little love to everybody else as well. But certainly he is fantastic throughout the whole season, does a great job. And when he's confronting the older version of himself and he's doing his little scratches and clicks in the sweats, that's when you get to see some more life or some more layers to that character, which is fun to see. And Ben as well. Ben and Vanya, that scene when Vanya's in her mind is such a tender, beautiful scene. And what it leads to in the final sequence and final scene of season 2 is great as well. Because you're like, oh, we're all set up for a wacky season 3 now.
Did you have a favorite moment of the season?
It's a good question. Did I have a favorite moment of the season? Probably that scene. That scene, because they've always kept Ben kind of on the sideline. And then finally having him have that moment with Vanya rather, and actually have a consequence to the decision, I thought was great. And it was very sweet to see him possess Klaus and have that interaction with that girl at the commune or wherever they're at, the big rich mansion. But I would say that scene, because Justin Smith, he got to actually act a real tender moment with Ellen Page, and the way it went down was so awesome, you know. And then there's another issue, tackling mental health, bringing someone out of the fear of embracing their power. He helped her do that, and the cost was his full-on energy existing in the world again. And so I was like, wow, that is such a, I loved that scene and what it led to, for sure. And second is Vanya wiping out everybody all at once. That was badass as hell, to be honest with you. So that was my, what about you?
On the action side, probably the Ben and Diego taking on the Swedes with Lila coming in to help. That one, that was just a fun sequence. I love when we get to see Five kick ass, because he's older than everyone, but he's still in the body of a kid. But he also has this incredible teleportation power. Yeah. On the dramatic side, it's two, and they're both Ben related.
Okay.
And One is young Klaus and young Ben, and the other is older Ben, which I won't go into. I don't want to spoil it, because the older Ben moment just ripped my heart out.
Young Klaus, young Ben is sweet as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It's a fantastic scene. All right, well, there's our spoiler review, kind of spoiler review of season 2 of The Umbrella Academy. Hopefully you watched all the episodes. We didn't ruin anything for you. Or maybe we excited you again to go back and rewatch them and have some fun watching them. Let us know what you thought of this review down there in the comment section below. Remember to like and share this video as well. Let other people see what we thought about this season 2 of The Umbrella Academy. And also subscribe to the channel for more reviews just like this and more content that we got all over the Outlaw Nation channel. Thank you to Shannon McClung for taking the time. And where can they follow you, Shannon?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's at Shannon_McClung, and on Instagram, at ShannonTheGeekBuddy.
There you go. And, of course, every Wednesday now, you can listen or watch us on the Geek Buddies. We drop new episodes on the podcast feed and on this YouTube channel every Wednesday afternoon now of the Geek Buddies with our other friend, Michael Vogel. And you can follow me at TheRocaSays on Twitter and on Instagram. Y'all take care of yourself.